If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
This food's not going to harm me. I'm not following diet culture anymore. I ditched that a while ago. So I'm going to go with what my body feels good. And I know I feel good when I have X, Y, and Z, whatever it is.
Hey guys, welcome back to a new episode of the podcast. I'm Nina, your host. As most of you know, if you've been listening for a while, certified holistic health coach and Reiki practitioner. Today on the show, I am talking with registered dietitian Beth Rosen. And I knew I had to get her on the podcast, especially after talking with Julie Duffy Dillon a couple episodes back, because Beth focuses on helping her clients that are struggling with gut health, whether that be IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And she does this all through a health at every size, intuitive eating, non-diet approach. And I think that this is where the real work happens. This is where we are heading. We're done with restriction mindset. We're done with food and weight loss and diet mentality. Really, what it comes down to and what's most important is, how does food actually make you feel mentally and physically? And so I absolutely loved this conversation with Beth and how she approaches helping her clients work through things like the low FODMAP diet, how to do this with a positive mindset and really focusing on tuning into what specific foods are triggering the body and not fearing food. And even in this conversation, I know we're talking more about gut health, but I think it's so related to hormones. And I talked to her about this a little bit in the podcast episode, but we have such a fear around food in this wellness community. And I'm raising my hand over here because I've been in the holistic wellness space for a while now. And I know that it can cause us to demonize certain foods, feeling bad about ourselves if we have sugar or if we have gluten or dairy. Because if you read any of the books on hormone health or follow a functional medicine doctor or anybody that is trying to help with balancing hormones or even gut health, it's all about, well, these foods are good and these foods are bad. Take these foods out and you'll feel better, or they're going to reduce inflammation. And while I really believe that there is power in the food that we eat, I'm not trying to discount that by any means. And I have felt so much better by modifying my diet and focusing in on foods that are going to provide my body with the nutrients it needs to thrive. I began to notice that I was developing a disordered relationship with food. I was fearing food that was quote unquote unhealthy for my body. And although I don't think I would label myself as orthorexic, I think I was starting to have a lot of orthorexic tendencies. And I'm really glad that I was aware enough to see that, because it's not good for us to only want to put the purest forms of food in our body, thinking that this is what's going to heal us, that this is going to cure us of whatever we're struggling with. And again, you know, there is power in food, absolutely, but it's not always about the food. And the reason I'm going on a rant about this right now, and I promise you we're going to get to Beth's episode here in a minute, but I really had a revelation in the past couple of months. And it came out of me still struggling with a lot of hormone symptoms. And you know, I've done the restriction with my diet. I've taken out all the gluten. I've taken out all the dairy. I've taken out the sugar. I've not drank the alcohol. You name it, I did it. And although it would help a little bit, it's not like my symptoms all went away. And that really got me thinking. It's not always about the food. It really isn't. And that's why this work is so multifaceted. Yes, we need to address the nutrition piece, but we also have to address our stress. We have to address the way we are talking to ourselves. We have to look at, is our body detoxing well? Like, what's going on with all of these other areas of the body? And when do we need to seek out additional help or people like Beth, who specialize in gut health? Is it maybe SIBO? And is that something that's causing my body to be in fight or flight because my body's not able to digest certain foods and we need to focus on that? All I'm saying is make sure that when you are trying to work through whatever hormone symptoms you're struggling with or gut health symptoms you're struggling with, not just to pinpoint it on one thing like food. There are so many other areas of wellness that we need to look at. And as we head into this episode with Beth, I cannot wait for you guys to hear her perspective because it's so refreshing and it's so relieving to hear that we don't have to be controlled by the food we put into our mouths. So just a little bit more about Beth before we get into this episode. She is, of course, a non-diet registered dietitian, the owner of Goodness Gracious Living Nutrition. She has a bachelor's degree in dietetics from University of Maryland, a master's degree in nutrition. She really knows what she's talking about here. And I cannot wait for you guys to dive in. And if you are loving these episodes, make sure to share it with a friend, with a family member, with a woman who needs to hear it. This is why I started the podcast. So let's share these episodes far and wide so that so many women can get this necessary information. All right, listeners, I am here with Beth Rosen, registered dietitian, and I found you because I was snooping Instagram. I recently had Julie Duffy Dillon on the podcast. And
she's one of my besties.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like on her Instagram and I came across your page and I was like, you are perfect. You are exactly who I need to talk to about gut health and how to approach this in a non-diet intuitive eating way. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure.
So why don't you start by sharing about your story a little bit? I know you were a dietitian. You took a little break from it. Then you came back to it with this more intuitive eating, anti-diet approach. So I would love to hear how that all transpired.
Oh, sure. So I went to school for advertising design. And quickly realized that that's not what I wanted to do. Changed my major to journalism. That wasn't what I wanted to do. Although the tools I learned from that really help with writing and blogging, things like that. But I had a conversation with my mother and she said, well, you know a lot about nutrition, so why don't you look into a nutrition degree? And the reason why I knew a lot about nutrition was because I've been dieting since the age of 9.
Oh my gosh.
You know? Yeah. And so I had been really indoctrinated into diet culture before I really had consent to it. Yeah. And so I had learned how to restrict and that my body was wrong very early on in my life. So it made sense that if I was going to major in nutrition, maybe I could, one, prove my family members wrong who said things like watermelon is fattening, or there was a lot of that, you know, different food rules that were not intuitive.
Yeah.
And also to figure out how I might find the magic bullet. Like, how can I make my body right? Quote unquote, yeah. You know? And so I went into dietetics and graduated, went on to get a master's degree and did my internship and sat for the RD exam, became an RD. And I said that very quickly, but it's a very long process.
Yeah.
So shout out to all the RDs out there that do that work to get to, you know, have the credential. And my first job, my first real job was what was called the health education department. Now it would be called corporate wellness or worksite wellness at a big company in Manhattan. And what I got to do there was write curricula and go out and present it all over New York State. And it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I really liked community nutrition. And I liked that I had the freedom to add in what I wanted to add in and not do what I didn't want to do. So even from the beginning, I knew that I didn't think dieting worked because I hadn't found the answer. So I felt it very difficult to share with potential clients or in these groups telling people what to do to make themselves smaller when I myself hadn't figured it out.
Because right? It's not a thing.
Not it doesn't a thing, work. Right? Like, yeah. Body diversity is a thing. Yeah. You know, weight loss, sustainable weight loss is not a thing.
Yeah.
So I really stayed away from weight management and working one-on-one with clients because I feared that I couldn't give them the answer or I would be judged on my body. I feared that my expertise would be judged based on what my body looked like rather than what I knew.
Did you find that a lot of people were coming to you as a dietitian just because they wanted to lose weight?
That's really the only reason why people sought out dietitians back when I started.
Wow.
And I didn't want to do that work. I just didn't. So I stuck with the corporate wellness for a little while. And then I took a mommy break. Mm-hmm. And while I was on my mommy break, I did a lot of volunteering in the schools and started doing some school lunch work and finding other ways to use my expertise, also not with weight management. But there became a point where I was like, why am I paying for continuing education credits on something I haven't figured out yet. I don't want to be swimming upstream the rest of my life trying to figure out the magic bullet for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I did take a break. I let my RD lapse. And then around 2012, I was like, maybe I should get that back because a lot of new diets were ticking up. You had a lot of the shakes, those kinds of the cleanses. And I said, I'm very much a truth seeker. And to me, it was there wasn't truth in what they were telling people. Like the products weren't what they were saying they could do. They were not going to do. So I felt the need to hang a shingle and say, open for business. This is not true. And I will help demystify some of this. And that's where I found mindfulness and mindful eating first and started doing some work there. I had actually read Intuitive Eating, the book, back in when I was in grad school, but hadn't internalized it yet.
Yeah.
And then I saw it and realized, I've read that before. And I read it again. And so I really connected with that. And I don't remember how, but I found the Health at Every Size or Haze community online. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I have people, you know,
this all makes sense with all of my inner beliefs. Yeah.
Right. This is exactly what I was looking for. And it's when I realized, okay, I can do authentic work as a dietitian, not pushing weight management or weight loss or changing people's bodies, but really doing what medical nutrition therapy was meant to do, which was to help people strive for health and well-being as separate from and independent from trying to make their bodies smaller, right? So some people's bodies might get smaller from it. Some might get bigger. That's not the point. The point is let's look at metabolic wellness and see what we can achieve.
I love that so much. And so that's where all of this really plays a role in my life. And I'll be honest, I never really thought much about diets. I mean, I definitely restricted my eating a lot, I think, in college. Just I was following the low-fat craze. I was doing, there were times where I was like, I'm eating pizza later, so I need to eat a certain way earlier in the day. But I wasn't like a huge dieter. And so when I got into the work I'm doing now, it was because I purely felt terrible. That's like, I talk about hormones a lot on this and dealing with hormone imbalance and dealing with gut stuff and dealing with a lot of anxiety. So when I came to food, it was because I was trying to heal all of those things. I was like, I feel terrible. I feel bloated. I feel anxious. I have acne. My period sucks. Like, what's going on? And so the more I got into food, I realized, well, now I feel like I'm actually fearing food, not from like, am I gonna gain weight phase or lose weight? It's because I'm afraid if I eat something, it's going to make me feel terrible. And that's when you started talking about what food was really meant for, to help us feel well. I feel like still there's like an issue with that, because now even if women aren't fearing food for weight loss or weight gain, they're fearing it because of like orthorexia.
Sure, they can be doing it for that. Or I have plenty of clients in my practice who have GI issues, who when they eat something, it hurts.
Exactly. And that's right? a whole nother side of things.
Yeah. So that's why it's important to work with a dietitian to figure out specifically your own individual triggers that might come from food. And then also to rule out whether or not food is an issue to begin with. Because some things that happen in our bodies have nothing to do with what we eat. And so, you know, yes, there's a piece that, you know, nutrition helps towards our overall well-being. But we only have about a 25% control over what happens to our health and well-being. The rest is out of our control.
Yeah.
You know, so the things that we can do, we can rule out things based on what foods we eat, but we can't always relate everything we eat to how we're feeling. Sometimes it has nothing to do with the food.
I think that's a huge problem right now in the wellness community, is that everybody blames so everything on food. And so I know, being transparent, and my audience knows this, I struggle with a lot of period pain. I'm on my period right now. I just took some Advil so that I could like do the interview. And I get into this phase where, okay, was it this? Was it that? Did I eat this? Did I eat too much of this? What's causing the inflammation? And recently, this is like within the past month, I had this revelation where I'm like, it's not all about the food. You know, if it was about the food, then I would have felt better a long time ago. Now, there is power in food. I truly believe that. But we put so much of it. It's so over exaggerated that it's all about what you eat.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I actually said to a client this morning who told me that her doctor told her that food is medicine. And I said, no, food is food.
Yeah.
Medicine is medicine.
Yeah.
Sometimes food can help and sometimes it doesn't. But if it doesn't, go to the medicine.
Right.
You know, don't assume you can fix everything by eating cauliflower. You can't.
That is, took me a while to learn, to be honest. I mean, I think in the past year is when I decided that food is not medicine. Food is there for you when you need it. And experimenting with food, I think, is helpful. Like an elimination type of diet. I don't know what else to call it, where I took out dairy, I took out gluten, I took out this and that. And I really did feel better, but then I had to bring stuff back in. And so for me now, dairy and meat don't really get along. And I just choose not to eat it because I found in my body, it doesn't make me feel good. But I've had to learn not to be afraid of other things because they weren't making a difference anyway. Taking all of it out wasn't solving the problems.
Right. And that's exactly what I'll work on with my clients, using a lot of times the low FODMAP diet, which is meant for people with irritable bowel syndrome, where we do have an elimination phase where we take out fermentable carbohydrates from their diet. And then very quickly, within 2 to 6 weeks, we're adding them back one by one so we can determine their particular triggers. Not everyone has the same triggers. Not everyone is triggered by food. So there are plenty of times when I'll have clients and we'll add food back and they'll say, I successfully challenged all the food you gave me on the list.
Yeah.
Well, then food wasn't the issue. Now let's talk about some alternative therapies that you can do to deal with your symptoms that have nothing to do with food. Mm.
So let's dive into this now. So a lot of people that listen to this, they're here because of hormonal issues, and hormones and gut issues seem to go really hand in hand. And I hear a lot of women, they struggle, they've been diagnosed with SIBO or IBS, and they're afraid of what to eat because everything upsets their stomach. So what is the first thing you tell people when they're struggling? And you've struggled with a diagnosis of IBS yourself, right? This is how you got into this work.
Well, I started with a bacterial infection called C. diff, and that led to post-infectious IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. And then in the course that I've had it, which is probably about 9-10 years, because it never did go away, I've had two bouts of SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, for those that don't know. So I've had almost everything.
So you know this stuff.
I know it. I felt it. Yeah. So I really can connect with my clients to say, you know, sometimes it's not the food, you know, and sometimes it is. And just like you said, you know, you and dairy don't mix.
Yeah.
That's your choice. You can choose to eat dairy and know what the result's going to be. Right. So you don't need to avoid dairy if you don't want to. It's not causing damage necessarily to your body. Like somebody who eats wheat, who has celiac, that causes damage. But if you have a sensitivity to something and you eat it, and you have the consequence, and you can still have the food even if you have the consequence. Consequence will go away. You'll know it's coming, right? I have the same thing with dairy. I know it's coming, but I have it sometimes anyway because I enjoy it, you know?
That is such a good point. And can we talk about that a little bit more? Because it's not wrong to feel bad after eating something. And that's something I had to work through myself. It's like I didn't cause myself to feel bad just because I had some dairy or I indulged in something. So how do you help clients process that? Like, yeah, maybe you do have a sensitivity to dairy, but if you eat it, it's fine. Or even gluten, And I mean, I'm curious on your opinion about gluten sensitivities and things like that. But yeah, what do you say to somebody when they're like, I just want to eat it?
So if it's not an allergy, which is an IgE response, or anaphylactic, or celiac, where damage can be done when you have that food, and it's just a sensitivity or discomfort or creates gas, I tell people, decide it's your body, right? You have the choice to decide what you put in it. Even if it was celiac, if you decided to put wheat in your body, that would be your choice. I wouldn't recommend that, but that would be your choice. It's your body. You have the autonomy. And I think what happens in diet culture is we lose our autonomy when we listen to food rules. But when we can get that back, when we start to eat intuitively and really listen to our bodies, you know, for instance, with the dairy, if you have dairy or if I have dairy, specifically, you know, something like a milk-based something, not always cheese, but some cheeses, right? Have something. In 4 hours, I can count in 4 hours that I'm going to have gas. I know it. I can hear it bubbling. I know it's coming. But I can do that without the anxiety that I'm not going to feel well later because I know it's just a little gas and it goes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I do have a non-celiac wheat sensitivity or gluten sensitivity. And I know that if I have gluten, I don't feel well for 4 days. So I decide not to do that because that's uncomfortable. A little gas I can deal with. But 4 days of fatigue and achy and stomach pains and, you know, loose stools, not fun. So that's my choice not to do that, right? So that's where people have that opportunity to decide what they're going to do with their bodies.
So what happens when you have made the choice? So you're like, you know what, let's say it's gluten and it makes you feel terrible for 4 days. And you're like, I don't want to, but you then start struggling mentally with restriction. So you go out and everybody's having pizza and they don't have a gluten-free pizza. And you just feel like, I just want to enjoy this, but I can't because I don't want to feel terrible for 4 days. How do you balance choosing to take something out, but not feeling the overwhelm and the restriction mindset around it?
Yeah. I would say advocate for yourself. If you're going out with a bunch of friends, find a restaurant, look at the menu, see what you can have on that menu, and then suggest that restaurant. Or if you're going to a restaurant, ask what options they have for you. I've lived with this a while. So for me, it doesn't feel like a restriction anymore. It feels like self-care.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm not going to feel in pain if I do this. So I'm taking care of myself. But just because I'm restricting pizza because I can't have wheat doesn't mean I can't have ice cream or their flourless chocolate cake, or I can still enjoy fun foods and restaurant foods and things like that. It just might not be the pizza and it might smell good and all those things, but I know it's going to cause me discomfort and I don't want to feel like that just to have that food. So for me, I don't feel like it's restriction. If somebody else is feeling that it's restrictive and they should have it, and then be mindful while the process is going on of what their body feels like, so they can remember, okay, when I have this food, these are the symptoms I feel, this is how long it lasts, and decide next time when you see that food on the menu, oh, I want that. Well, then you can weigh in with yourself. Well, this is how you'll feel. Is this okay? Are you comfortable with that? It's like, again, with the dairy, if I have the dairy at this time, where will I be in 4 hours? Is it going to be a place where I can sit with my pants unzipped because I'm so bloated from it, you know, or is it earlier in the day and I'm not going to have that opportunity? So I'm just not going to do it then, kind of thing. So it depends on really paying attention and learning from the experience rather than feeling badly about it or judging yourself for choosing that food. Use it as an opportunity to be curious and see what does this feel like in my body? How do I feel after? And do I want to do this next time?
Yeah. Oh, you know? So good. What about just feeling angry and mad at your body for feeling bloated or for having these reactions? It's another thing I see a lot with my own clients is my stomach hurts all the time and I'm sick of doing it all. What do you have any coping tips for people when they start to blame their body because it's not working the way they would like it to, or maybe the way that their friend's body works?
Yeah. Of course, first I would recommend working with a registered dietitian because if it is related to food, they are going to be able to really niche down the nuances of your diet and figure out what might be causing you this discomfort. The other piece I would say speaks to our society's ableism, where we're under the belief that all bodies should work all the time. And everybody should feel good in their bodies. And that's just not the case. I mean, there's chronic illness, there's fatigue, there's disabilities, there's so many different things that people experience that you're not going to feel good in your body all the time, regardless of the commercials you see where ladies running in white dresses through a field on a sunny day with their period.
Right.
It's not going to happen. Right. You're going to be laying in a bed with a hot water bottle, Advil, and you can't, you know, you have to wear your loose pants because everything hurts.
Yeah. Right? Welcome to my life today.
Right. And so that's a way of, again, instead of being mad at your body, you're showing compassion for your body and saying, okay, I'm going to wear loose clothing. I'm going to take my Advil. I'm going to rest today. Those kinds of things. When you can, do those things. So instead of beating yourself up because you've compared yourself to somebody, right? So comparison is the thief of joy.
Always.
You're not going to get joy out of saying, why aren't I like them, right? So by showing yourself compassion instead, what can I do to make myself feel better? Is there anything I can do to soothe or comfort myself?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I would look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I just don't care anymore. Like, I'm too tired to hate my body and judge it. So I'm going to wear the loose pants. And I was really against, because I'm telling you, this holistic and wellness world can get you sometimes. It can make you feel bad for taking ibuprofen. Like, you just shouldn't do that. Try this, try the ginger, try. And you try all those things and they don't work. And then finally you're like, you know what? I'm going to take the Advil. I'm going to lay in bed with the heating pad and I'm not going to judge my body or myself because I'm just too tired to. And I feel like when you get to that point, it's so releasing. I'm like, it's okay. And this too shall pass. I'll be here for a day or maybe two and then it'll be better. But I know that my body is working through something. I know that my body is sending me a message that it's time to slow down. And I think that can be applied to hormone issues or gut issues at the same time.
Yeah. You have to make accommodations for your body and you have to do what's best for you. And you don't need to tell anybody what medications you're taking or not taking. It's no one's business, right? There's again, this ableist belief that you shouldn't take pills because you'll be healthier if you don't. But some people need medication in order to be healthy, right? So if taking the ibuprofen helps you have more energy and less pain in that day, then by all means, that's helping you. So take those pills.
Yeah. Quality of life. Like, what makes you feel the best? What helps you show up and live your life and not feel in pain or whatever your symptom is?
Exactly.
So I want to go back and talk a little bit more specifically about maybe IBS and SIBO and the low FODMAP diet. How have you implemented these tools like the FODMAP diet, keeping this anti-diet approach in mind?
Okay, that's pretty simple. So to me, even though it has the word diet at the end, it's not a diet. It's a tool to help someone figure out what their triggers are for their IBS symptoms, right? But before I start with a client, I screen all of my clients for maladaptive eating behaviors, disordered eating, and eating disorders. It's a 16 question questionnaire that they fill out when they come to see me. And I can tell from that if they're a competent eater or if they have some disordered eating behaviors. And that's when I'll decide what form of the low FODMAP diet I'm going to use with them. I either will not use it at all and we'll start to talk about if they're restricting, how to get them to liberalize their diet, right? If they have something like binge eating disorder, we'll talk about, again, restricting, because restricting leads to binging.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it might be, we work on that first. In many cases, up to 98% of people with eating disorders have GI disorders.
Mm.
So, can you
explain why that's so connected?
Sure. So when you are restricting, your body doesn't know the difference between doing it on purpose and like a starving caveman. It's our primal brain that regulates this. And so when we are not eating enough to fuel our bodies, our metabolism will slow and everything will slow. So for a lot of people, they will have constipation or something called gastroparesis, which is a delayed gastric emptying. So food will just sit in the stomach. It might cause nausea. There's some atrophy to the stomach. So the stomach will shrink, not leaving a lot of room for food. And when it does stretch, it can cause pain. So there's that piece. And then for people who might be suffering from bulimia, and any sort of purging like that. So the vomiting can cause reflux because acid is now going up the esophagus. So there's a lot of different ways that dysregulating your intake can dysregulate how your gut works.
Yeah.
You know, our gut's a system of muscles and nerves and communication between the brain and the gut. So it's a well-oiled machine typically, but when one cog is out of place, say, you know, not eating enough or not eating enough of the right nutrients to fuel your body, or purging and making your system go in the opposite direction, it can cause a disruption to the system.
That just goes to show you right there why restriction is never the answer, because it causes so much stress in so many different areas of the body.
It really does. And for a lot of my clients, we just start out with, I want you to eat often.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to eat every 3 hours. If you don't hear your hunger signals, I want you to feed yourself. Because the more regularly you feed yourself, which this is in total antithesis to the current fad, which is don't eat at all, the intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
But so eating regularly helps your gut and your regulatory system realize that, okay, we'll be fed regularly. So we can rev the engine again. We can try to oil the machine and get it working. And that way, if somebody's coming to me from a disordered eating place, the gut issue will remedy on its own just by regular feeding.
Which is insane. Our body is craving food. I also think it's crazy that your hunger cues can get shut off. Like, you don't realize you're hungry, or even your fullness cues can become so distorted just from restricting, binging, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, lots of diet rules can do it too. You know, if you think that when we were born, we have this innate system to know when we're hungry. You know, babies cry. Mm-hmm. That's how they tell us. And when they're full, they either turn away or they fall asleep. Even toddlers, when they're done eating, if you try to put extra food in their mouths, they spit it, they throw it, right? So they have those tools. They know how to do that. But if you then bring in messages of no, one more bite, or the clean plate club, or you shouldn't eat that, depending on how it is, you can create a system of either pushing someone to eat past fullness, or not allowing them to honor their hunger by not letting them eat to their satisfaction. So all of those things have happened, whether it's in your family of origin or you learned it in school, because our curriculum in school is so fat phobic and telling kids that they shouldn't have bigger bodies. Right in the middle of puberty, they tell them that, when they should be gaining 20 to 50 pounds anyway. And then, of course, diet rules that we hear and messages from, you know, the different diet companies that have commercials that just like constantly beat at us, right? So we hear it from every place.
We're consumed.
We're just bathed in this message. And so going way back to why I got back to being a dietitian, you know, I wanted to sort of not be in counterculture originally, but now I'm full on in counterculture because it's very hard to get people to break free from the daily messages, right? Because it's everywhere. It's a community of people who connect through disordered eating.
It feels so true. That I think that's the hardest thing is you're like, when you start learning the message about intuitive eating and listening to your body and ditching weight loss, weight equals health. It honestly almost feels like, no. Like, I've heard this my whole life. This is what the doctors say. This is what my family says. This is true. And it feels like very difficult to break all of that down because, I mean, from the moment you're born, it's what you're learning. It's what you're seeing. So I'm really thankful for the work you're doing and everybody in this intuitive eating space, because we're now bringing it out into mainstream. Like, this is not normal.
Yeah. And it's amazing to watch Evelyn Tribbley, who's one of the authors, Elise Resch is the other one, of intuitive eating, really coming into her own now with all the speaking engagements and the podcast she's been on, and really sharing her message that was out 25 years ago and is now just getting picked up. And to hear her speak and have her message out there, that she shares tons of scientific evidence. So if people say, well, I've heard this from my trainer or my doctor or my parents, I'd like them to look at the research and say, well, you're not hearing this research because no one makes money off of this.
Right? That's the problem.
So like, yeah, because this is a $72 billion industry, the diet industry. Like, keto came out within this year, right, or 2 years. There are products on the market that say, quote unquote, keto friendly on them, right? Consumers drive what the market will put out.
True.
And so diet culture is all over our supermarkets, right? So it's there too. So it's nice to hear Evelyn talk about the science and the studies, and she posts all the time on her Instagram the studies. So if you want to follow her, she's on there. But to get back to the low FODMAP piece. Yes. I really has been jumping around.
This is me. So, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So the first piece I do is I screen for maladaptive eating, and then I decide which form of this, if it's the appropriate intervention, which form of it will I use. So the full form I will use on people who don't have any disordered eating issues. You know, they might be in diet culture a little bit,
yeah.
But when we talk about elimination phase, the thing with the low FODMAP diet is that we're not removing food groups. We're removing certain foods from each group that are fermentable, but there's still foods in every group. You can have bread. You're just going to have sourdough bread or gluten-free bread. You can have fruits and vegetables. You're just going to avoid certain ones like garlic and onion and apples, but just for a short time. The elimination phase, if you don't feel a difference at all in 2 weeks, then we abandon ship, right? So, and you can go as long as 6 weeks. We don't go past 6 weeks because there could be a food fear that builds.
Right.
People don't really like to go to the next phase when they've been on something that makes them feel good. And also, we don't know how it affects our microbiome long-term. So we like to switch people back into the reintroduction phase to start systematically adding foods back in to determine their triggers.
That's a big one, is with the microbiome. When you restrict food for so long, your bacteria changes. And when you bring it back in, it's not able to digest it because you've taken it out for so long. So some people then create a sensitivity. And I think that also is a fear of, okay, well, if I take this out for a long time, what if I'm never able to eat it again? And I find that seems to happen with people that take out meat too, is they'll feel better. And then when they try to bring it back in, if they've taken it out for long periods of time, their body isn't able to digest it as well anymore.
Yeah, I would say if that's the case and you want to start to liberalize your diet, you can always work with digestive enzymes to help you along until your body sort of realize that this thing is coming back in. But our bodies are resilient. For the most part, we can eat everything. We really can. So, with the exception of allergies, which isn't the general public, although we're led to believe that most of us have them, we don't, we can enjoy all foods. And if it takes a while to add them back in, take the time, have a little bit, have a little bit each day, see what happens and see if you can tolerate it.
When you were talking about us being born intuitive eaters, I think about that all the time when I start to make food hard. This isn't how it should be. Like primal years, we never worried this much about food. We just ate what was there. And so that always clicks with me is like, it shouldn't have to be hard. And if it's hard, then we're putting rules around it that don't need to be there.
Right. We're actually very privileged now in our society to have access to food basically 24/7, where if we go back to like caveman days, it was, hunt and gather and feast and famine because it was what was available. If you could catch the lion, then you got to eat the lion kind of thing, right? But now you can walk into any supermarket or order online or Postmates or whomever else and get things delivered 24/7. So I think what becomes the issue is deciding the what. What do I want? Right? Mm-hmm. What am I in the mood for? And then that piece gets tied up in, well, what rule will I break? Or how much anxiety might this cause if I break the rule? Mm-hmm. Right? But with intuitive eating, there are no rules. It's really just, how does this food make me feel? Am I in the mood for it? What do I have on hand? And then if we want to go into gentle nutrition, which is the last principle of intuitive eating, it's, have I had something in this food component category today? Am I getting enough of whatever the food is over the course of the day so that I get the nutrients from it? Like if I had fruit today, or did I get a fun food in because, I'm on my period and I want some chocolate. Like that's okay. Eating the fun foods doesn't negate the benefits of the work foods. So you can have broccoli and you can have chocolate, and the chocolate doesn't take away the benefits of eating broccoli.
I wonder if that's a lot of fear too, is that if I just eat freely, then I'm not going to be prioritizing getting in all of my nutrients or something. And what would your argument be to that? Like, we do want to prioritize making sure we're getting in all, enough protein, enough fat in our diet, enough fiber, these like main macros that we just want to get into our diet to feel well. Does anyone ever come up with that argument? Like, well, what if I just am not going to be eating enough, or I'm not going to be getting the nutrients I need?
So I think that if you go through the process of becoming an intuitive eater again and allow yourself to eat all the foods that you restricted. For a while, you're not going to be considering that. For a while, you're going to be eating all of the fun foods you could get your hands on, or all of the foods that were in the no list or the bad list for a while, until you can remove the stigma from those foods. And then food just becomes food.
Yeah.
And once that happens, and of course it takes some work, but once that happens, you can get to a place where you start to say, okay, well now I'm really in a place where I want to use food to take care of myself to the best of my ability, meaning I can only do so much. So let me do a little bit with this, but not make it all of your energy focused on what am I eating now? What am I eating next? What am I eating this week? That is not so healthy. That creates anxiety.
Exactly.
Right. And that anxiety can create stomach issues. Right. So we don't want that to happen either. So I would say go through the process of getting away from all of the restriction, allow yourself to eat all the foods that you were never allowing yourself to eat. And then you'll come to a place of peace around food where you can say, well, what am I in the mood for? And our bodies don't need the same amount of food every single day. Some days we're going to need more. Some days we're going to need less.
Right.
Some days we're going to have more protein. Some days we're going to have less protein. Over the course of a week, our body will take what it needs. We have very resilient bodies. We really do.
They're very smart.
Yes. So if we don't, like if one day you just don't feel like eating vegetables, nothing's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
If you don't feel like eating them for a week, nothing's going to happen to you.
Right.
Right? Yes. Do they have vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and fiber? They do. But so do some other foods. So if there's a time when you're just not in the mood for it, I bet you down the road after not having it, might be like, I am in the mood for salad.
Yeah.
Or I just want to chomp on some celery. Like it will happen. It does happen. After a while, once those rules aren't there, you say, you know what? I actually like that food. I'm not eating it just because it's a quote unquote diet food, but I think I like that food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
And there might be some foods that you realize you don't like that were diet food that you've been eating for years. And you're just like, I'm never eating that again. Like give you a balsamic vinegar. No, I'm done.
You hate it?
I don't hate it. It was the only thing I used on for years. And then when I realized, well, let me try salad dressing. Salad dressing is way better than plain vinegar, you know?
I actually love kale. And I had a moment where I'm like, am I just eating kale because it's a craze? And I was like, no, I actually genuinely really love kale. But I have fat-free ranch and light Italian gross me out now because that's all I put on my salads in high school and in college. It was like fat-free ranch, light Italian. And now if I see that or taste that, I'm like, ugh, like I'm so revolted by it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like, and this actually is going to get into another question. So I really like the Primal Kitchen dressings, the like ranch, the Caesar, all of that. I really enjoy them. Now, when I start thinking of recommendations for brands of foods and things that I really enjoy or I like to recommend to my clients, sometimes they fall under the paleo category or something, or like I know the Whole30 has a whole set of rules of what you can eat. And so what if you're like, but I genuinely like eating this style of food. Should I feel guilty because it's labeled paleo or because it's under a Whole30 list? Like how do you start to manage that where they are really great foods that are serving your body and you enjoy them, but they can be labeled under diet culture, put under the diet culture umbrella?
Yeah. So I would say no food should make you feel guilty unless you stole it or like killed the chef.
Yeah.
That would be a reason to feel guilty. Otherwise, no food should make you feel guilty. If you're eating foods that are quote unquote paleo because you like them, as long as you're not restricting other foods that are not paleo, but you're not really eating paleo. You're just eating foods that would fall onto that diet, but they would also fall into the Weight Watchers and they would fall into intermittent fasting and they would fall into who knows what other diet, right? So not all diets share the same rules, which is part of the confusion. But if you like something that happens to be a paleo thing, you can eat it. You know, the only thing I would ask you to consider is, do you choose this salad dressing because it's quote unquote sugar-free or paleo, or if there was a salad dressing that if they didn't have that salad dressing in the store and they had, you know, Caesar paleo or Caesar regular, would you get the Caesar regular if they didn't have the paleo, if you wanted the Caesar dressing? I'd ask you to consider that, right? A lot of times people say to me, well, what salad dressing should I buy? And I would say, well, what salad dressing do you like? Because that's what you should choose. What do you like? Right? What can you afford? You know, those kinds of things. What doesn't hurt your body? Also, what doesn't hurt your body?
Yeah.
Once you figure those out.
I do find, so when you started talking about that, that actually hit a trigger point in me that made me think, oh, if they didn't have the Primal Kitchen Caesar dressing, would I buy regular Caesar dressing? And in my mind, I was like, actually, I don't know if I would. So what, but when I do that, it's not because in my mind, I'm afraid the Caesar dressing is going to make me gain weight. In my mind, I think it's because of some of the things you said where I like the wholesome ingredients in the Primal Kitchen dressing. So then I'm thinking to myself, well, is that good or bad thought process? Or is it just that I've chosen because I do feel like that makes me feel well? Does that make sense? I feel like sometimes there can be some guilt around choosing. Here, I know where I'm going with this. Sometimes I feel like then we can get wellness guilt. Like, oh, am I doing this because of wellness guilt? Or am I doing it just purely because I like to eat this way and it's fine? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And I would say to you, that's a great time to experiment. Go buy the non-Primal Kitchen Caesar dressing and taste it and decide if you like it and see if it brings you guilt and anxiety because it's not Primal Kitchen, and see if it's related to, well, I was eating it and it made me feel like special or better because I'm following some rule that I don't realize I'm following.
Yeah.
Like, am I still caught up in diet culture by choosing this brand or am I doing, cause I really just like the flavor. Like if I took the label off of it and I took the label off of a different brand and said, try these and you liked the Primal Kitchen one better, then fine. But if you only liked it better because it had like four ingredients in it and this Caesar had seven or eight, then I'd say, well, what's the difference really? Like, it's dressing. Dressing is dressing. You're not living only on dressing. That's why having a variety of foods in your diet is great, because you can have a mix of different things. Not one food is going to make or break your health.
There's things
a superfood. So, you know, nothing's going to make or break your health. Not one food.
That's a really good point. So when you're working with clients on this, and say you do have somebody that needs to follow the low FODMAP diet for a while because of these digestive issues, do you find that they have to heal their relationship with food first before you can implement something like that? Or do you find that you can do both at the same time?
It depends. It depends on how disordered their eating is. If it's just a diet culture, like chronic dieter, for the most part, we can work through that. And typically, again, in that place, I'm having them liberalize their diet while they're on the low FODMAP diet. So it's not even really restrictive for them. It actually gives them the opportunity or permission to allow themselves to eat foods from all categories, because it's very important to be eating foods that contain fiber. So you do need to eat grains. And that's, you know, one of the items that has been vilified over the past couple of decades. In the 80s, it was all grains. Now it's don't eat the grains, right? But you need the grains because that's where the fiber lives. It lives in grains and fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and legumes. And unfortunately, you can't have a lot of legumes. So now you have to figure out where can you have other things. So you have to go to oats and cornmeal and quinoa and things like that when you can't have a lot of the others in order to get that fiber to build up your microbiome again.
Now, okay, so somebody's like, you know, I'm having digestive issues and I think I'm ready to try a protocol that's going to help me. Would you say it's safe to go online and Google and try it? Or would you say you should go work with a registered dietitian to work on these things? Or because there's free information on Google about all of this stuff. So if somebody's listening and they want some advice, what would you say?
So personally, I would say, you know, if you have the ability to do so, work with a registered dietitian who specializes in GI health, if this is what you're suffering from. There are nuances to this diet. There's lots of information that's misinformation out there. Dr. Google does not update itself, unfortunately. So if somebody wrote a blog post 2 years ago, it's not going to be valid now because the science is ever changing. The folks at Monash University, they do research every day and they update their information every day. So if you're working from a handout from a year ago, it's going to be wrong. You know, so I think it's important to go with people who are up on the research, that piece. If you can't do that, then I would suggest, again, finding a registered dietitian or a certified low FODMAP specialist website. So whether that's Monash University, or that's my website, or Kate Scarlotta's website, she's another dietitian, or the food companies that provide education that are low FODMAP food companies like Fody Foods or Epicured or Beckon Ice Cream. These companies have information on their websites for people who are going through the low FODMAP diet or have lactose intolerance or whatever it might be. But I wouldn't necessarily go to like the random blogger who has IBS and fixed themselves, right? So that's, yeah. So I would say number one, go seek out professional help because the diet has the highest rate of success. That 86% of people who do well on the low FODMAP diet are people who've done it with a registered dietitian.
And you don't have to be on the low FODMAP diet forever.
No, it's not. It's really just, it's a quick elimination between 2 to 6 weeks. And then there's reintroduction. And the final phase is called the personalization phase, where you take all the foods that are allowed on the elimination phase, you add back all the foods that you've successfully challenged, and that's your diet. So you might be just removing one or two trigger foods or not. And again, just because you've removed them doesn't mean you can't have them.
Right.
Right. You can have them. You just will suffer whatever consequence there is. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's necessarily going to trigger a flare. With irritable bowel syndrome, flares are part of the disease. So you're not causing them. That's the nature of the beast. They're going to show up.
Yeah.
A food that might be a trigger for you could exacerbate a flare, but it's not going to be the reason why you don't feel good all the time.
That's so important. Like, so a food might trigger it, but if you have underlying IBS, it's not your fault if you have a flare. And it might have been the food that triggered it that time, but it's just part of the disease, unfortunately.
It is part of the disease. And I'll ask people, you know, is it something you ate? Did you get enough sleep this week? Are you totally stressed out? I will tell you that everybody in this world who has IBS right now is probably going to flare soon with what's going on with this COVID.
Just because of stress.
It's so much stress. It's the unknown. It's separating yourself from people. So there's that isolation factor too. And all of that can get people worked up. So there are alternative therapies to help people during that time, stress management techniques, a meditation, deep breathing, all those things sort of help to relax the body. And that goes back to that compassion piece, right? So you'll take care of yourself if you care about yourself, right? So if you're constantly fighting your body, if you hate your body, there's no way you're going to take care of it. But when you can come to make peace with it through getting off the diet cycle and realizing all bodies are good bodies and bodies come in all shapes and sizes rather than them all having to be one small size, then you can learn how to take care of it and find compassion for it and rest it when it needs to be rested, give it medicine when it needs the medicine, right?
Those kinds of things. So much. And that in itself is so much better for your body and helps your body heal more than micromanaging and controlling any sort of food that goes into your body.
Yeah. Sometimes I find that just, and not that I'm God or anyone, but sometimes just giving my clients permission to rest.
Yeah.
Take a break and say, you should really rest. You need to take a break. You have, you know, you're in a flare and you don't feel good and you're lacking energy. And this would be a good time to just lay down and do nothing.
And so often we want to do the opposite. It's like,
well, yeah, we, especially as women, we tend to equate our worthiness with our busyness.
Yes.
So we need to be productive in order to be worthy. And that's just not the case. Sometimes in order to take care of yourself, you need to have a whole do nothing day.
Yeah.
You know? Oh,
absolutely. And before we wrap up here, I want to touch on the stress piece, the mental piece. And so we know when we're stressed about food or what we're eating, this causes our digestion to just freeze up a little bit. I mean, I know that's not the technical scientific term, but it's harder for our body to digest food when we're in fight or flight. And so simply, you know, breathing before you eat a meal or tuning in and just noticing and being mindful. These things sound really woo-woo. And it's like, well, how's that supposed to help? But it really does. And so can you touch on that aspect a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I think mindfulness is a great way to really tune in and calm your body down. I will tell clients that if you are in a state of stress, take a deep breather before you eat. Don't eat during that state. Because like you said, when your cortisol levels are high and your body's in fight or flight, the blood is not in your gut getting ready for digestion.
Right.
It's often your extremities getting ready to run from the beast that's chasing you. Because again, that's the primal brain, right? So a lot of times I will have my clients say positive mantras before they eat. So this food won't harm me. This food will nourish me. I'm safe with this food. Those kinds of things. And a lot of times it's fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. Say it even if you don't believe it. Because the more we say things out loud, the more our brain believes them.
Yep.
Right? And the same with the negative things we say about ourselves. If we look in the mirror and we say terrible things about ourselves, we're going to believe them.
Yeah.
Right? So if we can reverse that by saying kinder, more compassionate things, well, calm our systems down a little bit and maybe have a chance to eat while we're not stressed.
It's crazy when you start to bring your awareness to how often I am choosing the negative voice over the positive voice. Some people are like, wow, I talk to myself really negatively all day, you know, and it's such an automatic response. Sometimes you don't even catch it. And so that little shift of just switching the phrase to something more positive, I mean, your body will start to take that in and it'll start to soften. It'll start to relax. It takes a while for some people, but it's okay. Just start with one mantra or start with just catching it, the negative self-talk first, and then slowly but surely it becomes more of a norm.
Yes. And that's something I work with with my clients as well, where I want them to separate themselves from that voice. Cause that nasty voice, I call it the inner mean girl. That nasty voice is not you.
Exactly.
You don't want to talk to yourself that way. This is the only body you have. It's time to treat it kindly. So if you hear that voice, tell it to be quiet or use, you know, more force than that. And then maybe say something neutral or positive that might turn it around, you know, like, this food's not going to harm me. I'm not following diet culture anymore. I ditched that a while ago. So I'm going to go with what my body feels good. And I know I feel good when I have X, Y, and Z, whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, this has been so lovely. And I hope that everyone listening feels a sense of relief. I think it's relieving to realize that you don't have to be controlled by food, whether it's a gut issue or whether you're trying to fix an underlying hormone imbalance, because we're just told so much about what we can eat and what we can't eat, and it can become really stressful. So just starting to experiment with this new way of thinking is so healing for the mind and for the body.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
So where can our listeners find more about you? You have online resources. You obviously work privately with clients. So can you let them know if they want more information on working with you, where they can find that?
Sure. So I have a website. It's www.goodnessgraciousliving.com. And on there, you can see my philosophy. You can connect with me there. I do work one-on-one, both in person and virtually. And I also have two online courses. They're both housed at my course site, which is different, which is www.innergirlpower.com. And one is helping folks get off the diet cycle and learn how to make peace with food, really listening out for your hunger and fullness cues, talking back to that inner mean girl. All of those things are in that course that's called Inner Girl Power Non-Diet Mission. I do have a freebie on my site as well called the Inner Girl Power Challenge, which can give you a little bit of a jump start into that. And then when you're ready, if you want to take the course, if this is something you want to explore, you can go to the course link that I just mentioned. Then I also have some freebies for people who have gut health issues. I have two. One is something called the Tell Your IBS Story Template. It's a downloadable template. You can print it out. And fill in all the information of any doctor's visits you've had, medications, symptoms, triggers, all that information so that when you do go to a provider, whether it's a dietitian or a doctor, you can share that information quickly so that you can get help quicker. Then I also have a free webinar on my website. That's the three strategies for becoming successful with the low FODMAP diet. And then I have a course that if you want to take a deeper dive into healing your symptoms from IBS and dealing with not only just the low FODMAP diet in totality, but also alternative therapies that may help if food isn't the issue, and also some stress management techniques to help you with the anxiety. That's at www.innergirlpower.com/gutinsync, S-Y-N-C, gut in sync. So those are my things, but you can also DM me on Instagram at Goodness Gracious Living. And that was a lot, but
we will link it all in the show notes. So if they're wonderful, like, I want that one, they can go in and they can find it right in the show notes and connect with you more.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait for all the listeners to continue to dive into your work.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much to Beth for coming on and sharing all of that knowledge with us today about gut health and healing our relationship with our bodies and food. It was such a refreshing conversation, and I hope that you guys felt that too. Make sure to check out the show notes for all those links she mentioned if you want to try out her course or any of the freebies she has on her website. And also, don't forget to share this episode with somebody if it's resonating with you. Make sure to screenshot this, post it on Instagram, tag me at Nourished with Nina. Let's get this information out to more women so they can start truly healing their bodies and building a better relationship with their body and their hormones. All right. I love all you guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I'll catch you all next Monday.